Everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Pain Club Talk Show. I'm live on YouTube every Sunday evening. And hello to anyone that's watching this back on our other platforms or listening on the Joel vs. Arthritis podcast, where we now are putting going forwards every single one of these interviews into that podcast feed for people that prefer to listen rather than watch. We are extremely fortunate tonight, folks. We've got a really inspirational young lady who's doing incredible things in the advocacy and equality space. Someone I'm fortunate enough, I'd like to think, to call a friend, and who I hope she's not shaking her head at this point, and who I've worked with in the past on inclusion and diversity panels. It's taken a long while, I think it's fair to say, for our diaries to line, but everyone, welcome in the founder of Chronically Brown, the wonderful Sukshin Kaur. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. That was such a sweet introduction. Thank you. And yes, of course we are friends. I would never say anything different. I'm okay. I think it's just been a very hectic few months with pain. I'm in a very similar position with you. So.
Well, do you want to, I know we're going to be talking a lot about sort of diversity and inclusion, things like that tonight, but it's always nice to have a little bit of background. Do you want to maybe tell us a little bit about sort of like the medical side, or maybe sort of what, you know, sets that scene for, you know, the path that we're then going to talk about this evening?
Sure, yeah. It's a bit of a mess, if I'm honest. But
we very rarely get straightforward linear diagnosis stories on it, don't worry.
It's not, and you know what? It's chopped and changed so much recently that I don't even know. So I've just kind of gone with chronic pain and then neurodiverse conditions. But to give it a short overview as well, just to, I guess, give more context to what I mean, is I'm pretty sure it's 5 years now, diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. It fairly seemed like that was the condition that I was dealing with and the only condition that I was dealing with at the time. I was at university, just a big mess there, trying to keep your social life active, keep, you know, studies that are okay, just keeping all that going whilst dealing with something that was so painful, heavy, all that kind of stuff. Recently I found out I have lived with ADHD, ASD and EDS as well, which is Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which I didn't know at the time I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis that I could have both. So even though I was having all the medications, and within about a year and a half I'd been able to keep my arthritis under control, I had the other part that was also still causing pain, but in the complete opposite way to how arthritis works. It's just been
Did that make sense though, when you got that? Because obviously I only know you from sort of like the RA background, that's how our paths crossed. But when you got that EDS thing, and that, did it make sense? Like, can you think of some times where the RA bit maybe didn't fit?
Yeah, there definitely was, because there was parts where I was going back to my rheumatology nurses and saying my kneecap keeps twisting, that's not normal, right? And they were like, no, that's not even considered part of RA. And I was like, okay, that's weird then. And I was like, maybe it's a one-off, but it just kept doing it. And then after that I kept rolling my ankle, which was about the fact that I was walking without realizing, but the ligaments or the muscles, they just weren't strong enough to keep them in place. So I just do it walking up the stairs, for example, or just walking from the kitchen to somewhere else. It just wanted to do whatever it wanted to, and it then caused inflamed and swollen joints that I would assume would be RA, but actually I was more prone to injuring myself because of the EDS. And I'm sorry, by the way, I just want to say the noise is this. I'm started using fidget toys.
No, that's absolutely
when I need
fine.
To concentrate. So Yeah, I just want to mention that. It's not like a weird noise.
We've had people join us in the back of taxis, on mobile phones, all sorts. So you don't have to worry about a bit of background noise at all.
Oh, yeah. You know what the other thing is as well? My dogs can just...
That's fine.
They can be the loudest things ever as well. So,
again, we've had cats on keyboards. That's fine.
It just can be really annoying sometimes, can't it?
Were they treated the same? So like, was there times when you were being and I know this is a bit unprompted compared to the stuff we're going to talk about, but just because I'm fascinated, and they're like obviously you treat the target sometimes, and I'm guessing there must have been times where you're thinking you can't get on top of the RA stuff, and that you now probably know there's a reason for that.
Yeah, there was definitely times like that, and it was because I've only recently found out about this. It was really hard to try and fight with health professionals and get them to listen to you about something that they weren't even considering, because there was no formal diagnosis. There was no, I mean, even hypermobility, I'm not like double jointed. It's not obvious. It was just very slight, to the point they were like, well, it's not enough, so that's fine, and just kind of push it to one side. It didn't make treatment easier. It didn't make acceptance of chronic pain as well. That was a minefield when you got an additional condition that you're not even aware of that you need to accept, but yeah, you can't because you don't know about it. So yeah, that didn't help either. There was just a lot of things that I think didn't help. But I think this is where like it comes into the whole intersectional perspective as well, because I was 20 when I was diagnosed. I was a university student. I am a woman. I am a brown woman as a fact as well, which kind of then adds on this layer of like health professionals not wanting to take you seriously, not wanting to give you adequate pain relief, literally demonizing and criminalizing you into believing that you're overreacting and that you need to continuously advocate for yourself. But also, oh, actually the fact that you keep coming back to say that you need more pain relief is just you addicted, and that you don't actually need that. But they were the reason why I had to keep going back. And yeah, it just was an endless cycle of trying to fight them. And you could never figure out or pinpoint the reason why you had to fight them and why they were not taking you seriously. But yeah, there was a lot of that. And there still is, still avoid seeing health professionals because of it. But yeah.
And it's really disappointing because I've done 101 of these conversations, and it is such a familiar story. How many of us got onto this path because through sheer frustration, desperation, or that whole advocating for yourself? And the bit that worries me, I don't know about you, there was definitely points in my journey where I was so close to going the other way. You know, I was dealing at times with suicidal thoughts and all this sort of thing, and blaming myself because of that stuff. And excuse me, you could have gone the other way. And that every time we have these conversations, I speak to these amazingly inspirational people like you, it's always in the back of my mind about how easy it would have been for me to, or you, to whoever, to take that other route. And that really sits uncomfortably with me. You know, we shouldn't be forced into this sort of like fork in the road, should we?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And mental health as well, is like, it's not something that you can escape just because you've got a physical condition or I mean anything else. Actually, it's always something that's like can be fragile at any point. And it's so surprising to me that even though that they like health professionals store all those identities, and the fact that I could have been more easily going down that route, especially as a young woman at university who has constantly said, you know, I've lost my social life, there is no friends anymore, there is just me surviving, and if she can leaving the house to go to my lectures, that was it. And they didn't correlate to, oh yeah, she needs something to help her with her mental like health declining. And I mean, I was fortunate enough for the fact that I could get private help for that as well, and private counseling. But I know that isn't the case for so many more people, and you know, especially when you don't have that support system around you. And it is in those initial periods of like when you're first diagnosed and you're still trying to like figure it out and what is happening to your body. That's where it really is like, I don't know, acute, and you really just need to like have that additional support, but you lose it from those that are closest to you, and you're like, okay, where do I turn to now?
Yeah, that hurts so much more as well, and you still see it today. And I know, you know, we've talked about it on here before, and I say, like, in my situation, it comes from a place of love. You know, people remember me playing in bands and rugby and doing all this other stuff, and then when they see me, I can't walk. You know, I totally get when you're close, you know, that's going to hurt. But then saying things like, oh, come on, pull yourself together, or whatever that comment might be, is not going to suddenly make you snap out of it. But I know it's because, just like from a human point of view, they don't know what to say. And I think that was another reason why I started doing this, is that kind of like trying to get people more comfortable with those conversations. Like, we've talked about some stuff I'm sure has made lots of people uncomfortable, and you'll see it in the viewer count. It's really disappointing. You see it on social media when followers drop off and things like that. But I think that just tells us we've got to keep making those spaces for people to have those conversations, to try and, you know, you can't help the odd one, can you? There's always going to be the odd person that doesn't want to engage, or is ignorant, or whatever, or has something deeper rooted going on. But I think for a lot of people, particularly in this country, we just seem to be so uncomfortable with those conversations. So I feel like I'm just going to keep having them until you're not. You know?
Yeah, you're so right. That's definitely something that I've been doing as well. It's like, you can't stop at any point. And it's, I don't know if you found this as well, and because of the fact that people don't know how to approach these kinds of conversations, I've pretty much just opened up to like whatever anyone wants to ask. I'm an open book at this point, because I just need people to understand what I've went through, so they can help and support other people better. Because there's no way that anyone can go through what I did 5 years ago again. I couldn't let somebody else be doing that.
And I'm so sorry you did go through that, because someone who can relate so deeply to that experience, you know, the circumstances were different, but the reason we were forced onto that path, I know how horrible and dark a time that is. I'm sorry you went through that, but I can really relate as well to that whole open book. Just gonna... because it works both ways. It stops the motivation to help other people, but also I'm sure there's a little bit of you doing that helps you as well, doesn't it? You know, in terms of managing the circumstances.
Oh yeah, it definitely does. It keeps me occupied instead of, you know, consistently thinking like, oh god, I'm in pain again today, I can't do this, can't do that. It's more of a, okay, well, at least I can, you know, I don't know, send a few emails to people and like let them know that I'm here if they want to talk. Or I mean, the internet's amazing. I think I made so many friends through like just like sharing this experience, and the fact that they can come to me and be like, I related so much to when you said X, Y, and Z, and can I please talk to you about it more? And it's literally like, I don't know, a few hours of a conversation. I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't spend the day just like in my bed wallowing in the amount of pain that I'm in. It's just open to whoever wants to chat and things. I mean, don't get me wrong, sometimes it's overwhelming, but for the most part,
yeah, there's definitely them. Yeah, there is. I've said that before. There are times you do have to just switch off or stop trying to reply to all the DMs, and especially when people are looking for magic bullets and you've gone through that journey that you've kind of started adjusting, and we're not qualified to have those conversations and saying, well, I can't fix it for you. But yeah, there is. You're echoing so much. Like, you know, I've joked before, I've said, like, if I wasn't doing this two or three evenings a week talking to people like you, I'm pretty sure my wife would have me in the shed sleeping by now, because I don't know how anyone would tolerate me, you know, because the opposite of when I'm not doing this stuff. Like, I don't know about you, I really struggle when I'm ill, when I'm in a lot of pain, I can't do this stuff, because there's only then the moments where I appreciate how much it helps me. It keeps my brain occupied, it stops me focusing on the pain, it gives me some hope for tomorrow, all those sort of things. And that's why I tried to do this stuff, even when I'm struggling or if I'm off work. And that's a whole can of worms I've had to justify in the past before. But like, for me, this is part of me keeping well. And yeah, I think you're probably the first person I've had on here that is echoing all those same things. I'm getting some validation tonight, so thank you.
Oh, honestly, if I'm just helping you, I'm okay with that. I
Yeah,
feel like that's
you
day like
write that on your
achieved.
list for this
Yeah,
week. Yeah, help, Joel.
absolutely.
Thank you for sharing all that. I appreciate it as well, because obviously we're like I say, we've only connected in the past with the RA thing, and obviously you've got two other diagnoses there and lots going on. So I do appreciate you being really open, and I can see the confidence it brings out, because I know it does me. You know, I've done it, but this surprises me doing all this, how it can make you find skills you didn't know you have. And I had a recent one like last year where, like, talking about the mental health side, people were saying, oh, we're on the taxi going to this talk, and someone said, we can't talk about mental health because we're here to talk about psoriasis. And I said, well, I'm going to, because I can't talk about it without talking about that side of things. And the old Joel, a couple of years ago, would just be a nod and dog. Whatever you want. And I think it's that, it lights that fire in you, and just it helps you be a better person. And I don't know, I've only known you a couple of years, Suxine, but the way I can see you're growing, it's just it amazes me. I feel very privileged to have a sort of little window in on that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, because I was quite I don't know how to describe it, but I'm gonna go with shy, but very timid and like very reserved as well before I like I don't know before I got to this point actually, because I never was able to talk about myself just generally, just to like even like a small group of people. But then when it became public, I really wanted to push myself to do stuff like this because of the fact that the output would be helping people, not because I wanted to share the story itself, not because I wanted it to be all about me or something. Like, I'm very very similar to what you said earlier as well, before I start like came in as well, it's like you really get tired of talking about your story, like repeating the same thing over, and it's true. I really don't like saying it over and over again. But again, it's the output. It's like, as long as it helps one person, then I'm okay with that. I don't even mind that I'm, you know, in like so much pain and I can't really use my memory much, and like I know I'm gonna like trip over my words a lot because of the fact that I can't really remember, or like I don't know. But yeah, either way, I push myself to do this a lot, and I think I've got to a point where I feel a bit more comfortable, and I don't really have to like double think or double guess what I'm saying anymore.
It really does show.
I mean,
and people completely underestimate that whole, hey, being in pain, like I describe it as noise. That's the only way I can describe it. And then when people don't understand why you can't concentrate, or I'm trying to say to somebody at work how I literally cannot show you what I did today because it was just an assault on the senses and everything else, and you get like, I get into like this weird little cycle, and then I call it like my panic room, where I get to a point where the pain gets so much and I can't distract myself from it. And then I almost start freaking out, like I want to get off a roller coaster ride that I can't, sort of thing. And doing this, weirdly, this and writing seems to be the two things for me, and everyone's different, but like it gives me some control. You know, I can't change my situation, but in that little bubble inside the bigger bubble of my life, I can at least sort of pull the strings for a little while. And it makes me feel like I'm not a passenger anymore. And people never understand that when you live in permanent pain until they've been there, unfortunately. I wouldn't wish it on anyone, but it sounds like you have a similar experience there.
Yeah, it is about control, isn't it? Because there's a big part of like being diagnosed with these conditions that you it's almost like you've lost control over everything. You don't know anything about your body. I mean, there was a point when I was like first diagnosed as well, where I was like teaching myself how to walk in a calm manner, just so that I wouldn't overdo it. Or I mean, even just teaching myself the fact that like the whole spoon theory, but also just the fact that you take breaks in between things and like space things out. You really have to retrain your body and your mind to do stuff like that. But that's like you taking control. And then the fact that I could take control in like creating a community in a space as well, like I'm in the exact same boat as you. It helped me a lot, and there's parts where we put projects together and it's just come from the fact that I want to do it and I want to bring people with me to do it. I don't want to do that by myself. It helps. I don't know, it helps. Even if it's just talking, it just helps.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense, and you're a professional, because that segues perfectly onto the Chronically Brown stuff. So, like, I feel like I could sort of reminisce around our shared experiences all night, but for the benefit of everybody else out there. So yeah, I think we've probably got a really good idea there, like, why. I don't think we need to go any further on that. What brought you to the whole Chronically Brown thing? Because I think we can it just positively zooms from you, like, but if for anyone that isn't aware, you know, do you want to tell us a little bit about Chronically Brown, how it started, if, you know, maybe more on, like, if there was that path on that, rather than, you know, what we've just talked about, and how you try and help, and what areas you try and help with?
Yeah, so the path is, again, messy, because it was a complete accident what I did, but I absolutely love my job. But yeah, I started like a non-profit, officially started 2 years ago. But before that, when I was first diagnosed, I decided I was gonna make a social media account, specifically for this. It was Instagram, and I called it Chronically Brown. Very random username I just went with. And I use that to share about my experience of, like, living with rheumatoid arthritis and what it meant for me, because of, like, extended family members, I'm already getting my words mixed up, extended family members that didn't really fully understand what that meant for a 20-year-old, and why it wasn't just something you could take some paracetamol for, or, like, have some turmeric and be okay, like, within a matter of minutes. That they genuinely didn't understand that part. So yeah, it was just like sharing my everyday, like the fact that, oh, I can't go to university right now, and I don't have that option of, like, hanging out with my friends now. And it became something that other people were coming to me about and saying, like, oh, I identify with your username, I am also Chronically Brown. And then I, like, started to cotton on that actually this issue that I have with my extended family is quite broad to most South Asians, that have got, like, chronic pain conditions, neurodiverse conditions, physical disabilities, invisible, like, just the whole range of it, because it was such a big stigma to talk about for our communities. And I'm not sure why that surprised me, but I think it was just because I was in that haze of, like, trying to, like, cope myself. But yeah, shortly after that, I had actually started reaching out to people and saying, can you please just share, like, a bit of your story? Can I put it on my Instagram? Can I, you know, share a photo of you and share that kind of thing? Just so that other South Asians that have similar condition to you don't feel alone. They can actually see themselves in another person, because that was what was helping me when they started to message me. And yeah, as soon as I started doing that, it kind of just flew. I don't know how it became a non-profit, but it was something that I loved doing for people, just for the reaction that were giving me, the fact that they were, like, taking it on board. And don't get me wrong, tackling a stigma, which, Joel, I know you definitely know about, and I'm sure everyone else here knows about, but when you're tackling a stigma that big, you get a lot of hate for it too, and you get a lot of people just following just to tear you down. But I think within a few months of having that, I realized, well, at least I'm doing something right, because I'm getting attention from it. And somebody's trying to tear me down because I'm getting to a point where I'm getting a bigger reaction, bigger platform, bigger community. And you know what, actually, it's a good thing. It's hard to think like that, but it is a good thing. And yeah, and then since then, you know, officially came non-profit 2 years ago. We've got a team now, we're all volunteer led, it's all youth led. There's two sides of it, really, that I think that's where the intersection part comes in. It's that diversity of trying to make disability itself more visible, by showing more South Asians in it, And then the other side being that South Asians need to be more accepting to the fact that you can acquire a disability later on in life, and you actually can be born with a disability, and it doesn't need to be shamed. It doesn't need to have a stigma associated with it. They're still a person and a human that deserves that kind of respect too. So yeah, there's two sides to that we work with, and yeah, just pretty blossomed out of nowhere.
It really did. but I think a lot of that has to do with you. So I think you have, you know, you're probably like me and you're never giving yourself credit. So on behalf of me, our audience and myself, I'll say that that is you and it shines through. Because I know when we first started doing stuff together on that, on an inclusion panel that myself and Sukshin were a part of, it's like, it just, every time we spoke, it just, I don't know, the stuff you were opening my eyes to, it made me realize how much I needed to work more on coming out of like the immediate stuff that was in front of me. You know, like, I think you talked a lot about, you know, sort of like cultural thing to work with people maybe not going to ask for help, or they're that being like they're more likely to go to like a religious leader or something than a medical professional or whatever, and there's sort of little pockets of I just weren't aware of, you know, and that really surprised me. But the other bit I just wanted to say as well is that you really need to give yourself credit as well, because we've talked about it on this show so many times. There were so many of those accounts popped up in the pandemic that have long since gone, like just got. I remember there was literally when all the shield and stuff ended, within 2 months, there was just this mass. I lost like 200-300 followers, and I thought, what? I hadn't posted anything. I was like, what did I do? And I started looking down, just left, account inactive, and just like, wow, okay, so everyone's just going to go back to living then, are they? And just forget about that little community we built. So I think it gives me a lot of hope seeing that organizations like yours came out of that and just flourished at a time where people also felt the need to start hiding and just burying their head in the sand a little bit more. And, you know, because the pandemic definitely made people confront some of that stuff, didn't it? And but unfortunately, it didn't all last, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, it didn't last. And you know, I think there was a big part of the pandemic that it was about, like, COVID itself, but as well as the fact that, you know, we had a lot of like diversity representation talks and all that stuff that came out of it, and DEI and as a whole being included in just workplaces, and the fact that a lot of like senior leaders, no matter where you are, really aren't that representative or speaking for communities that are not heard from, I guess. And it was, I'm still seeing it now, actually.
I think it's once people like yourself opened, once people like yourself opened my eyes to that lack of representation, or how, you know, we're not doing enough, it just, I now can't unsee it. It was like somebody turning a light on. I literally now can't unsee it in organizations, social media posts, campaigns, or the lack of language translation options. It's just, I now cannot. It's like psoriasis. There's a real big issue in the psoriasis area. And I know obviously that's outside of your sort of remit, but you'll get lots of people want to show it on white skin because it, like, I don't know, it's that stereotypical people used to see in the really horrible scaly stuff on people's elbows. And there's been some recent campaigns like of to get more stock images out there of people with different color skin and things like that. And but yeah, once you opened my eyes to that, so I literally cannot now unsee how prevalent that is, and, you know, across some really big hitters as well that should probably be doing better. So it's nice to know there is someone out there sort of tugging at the ankles on these things to try and address that.
Yeah, you're so right as well, because I've come across so many people that have got skin conditions and with a lot of darker skin tones than myself as well, and they never realized how it wasn't normal, because health professionals have said to them, it's like, well, you can't see it too much, and it's because they've based off their you know, their medical knowledge is from images they've seen from white skin, and it's shocking that was still going on at that time. I feel like I've just lost my train of thought.
Not at
there,
all. But... No. But no, I think
I'm getting tired already. I don't even know.
No, you're fine. And I'm conscious it's Sunday evening as well, so I do appreciate you giving up your time. But I think it is just like the point I'm making there is just like for anyone who's new to all of this, go check out what Chronically Brain are doing, because it is like, for me, it was a bit like when someone first introduced pain management to me at a time when I thought you just had to take a pill for everything. And I didn't realize there was other factors that you could do of managing that. The stuff you guys do, It's like, it very much is that similar sort of like horizon expanding kind of thing, where it's like, once you're aware to look for it, you just see how obvious it is.
And there was that, you just reminded me as well, there was a big point as well where everyone was like, you're a hard to reach community. And that was a punch in the gut, I won't lie, because that was something that I was kind of sat there like, I'm here, I'm doing it, I'm trying to get these people to you, but you're not using it in the correct way that it's going to be impactful, so you're just blaming us instead. And that was it's still going on, to be honest, because I'm getting continuous emails going, can you help us with X, Y, and Z? And it's brilliant that people do and are now starting to recognize the work that we're doing and the fact that we can help with that, you know, that bridging the gap. But at the same time, it is very exhausting doing stuff like this on a voluntary basis, where it's more taking from us than actually supporting or helping us in that sense, because it is like, oh, we're just going to use you for the diversity aspect and just make sure that I don't know, our questions or our survey are completely correct for your community, but then that's it. We're not going to actually learn from you, we're not going to implement it in a way that is impactful for the future, we're just going to use you for this moment so we can say we had, you know, Chronically Brown consult us on X, Y, and Z, and then that's it. So yeah, there's still a lot of work that needs to still be addressed, but it's, I don't know.
I'll be here until 10 o'clock tonight if you get me started on tokenism, but I know what you mean. It's that tick box kind of, but I obviously similar subject, but not the same, but like, I totally get that whole, it frustrates me when that's like, oh, but there ain't enough. You do. That's not an answer. You know, I get it a lot when with the men talking about mental health, the amount of times I get an email, literally every couple of months, where someone will say, yeah, well, we would have asked, but there aren't that many of you men talking about mental health. And my thing will go back to him. It's like, well, look at your last speaker list that was all white females or whatever, you know, especially like, you know, the conference. When you start looking at it again, once you know to look for it, you really see it. The conference, you know, if it's not a panel of all male doctors, it's a panel of all white female speakers. And then I'll get an email saying, well, there aren't many of you men talking about mental health. Well, put us in those positions and we can try and change that. So I can't imagine with the extra layers you have, and I suppose that comes back to that intersectionality, doesn't it, the extra sort of layers you get with that. It must take I know what I have to fight against. I have so much respect for what you must have to fight against, and I imagine that tokenism thing's even more of a problem in the work that you do.
Because there's been such a good way of masking the tokenism part, that you don't even realize it's happening at the time when they're asking you to do whatever it is they need. And then you find out, I found out about one of them about very recently that I did a couple of years ago, and it was a punch in the gut to find out actually they tried to hide the fact that they had racism allegations thrown against them, and actually they didn't do anything to acknowledge, work from it and learn from it, but actually they tried to hide the fact that they did this whole report. They had to make it public, and it was I don't know what the technical term was for it, but they tried to like hide it off of Google so that you couldn't just search it and easily find it. And that really hurt to know that after the fact, because actually that's something that was hurtful to me. Even if I wasn't the one working now, I did something for you at the exact same time that was going on, and it made you look good when it shouldn't have made you look good. You should have been going, I'm sorry, we've done this, and we acknowledge and are trying to move on from it. Yeah, it still goes on. And I get away with it so well.
We might be talking about the same organisation, but I had a similar thing where I had a couple of years ago where I basically got kicked from a project. There was other reasons given, but at the time I'd raised a concern about, okay, why have we raised this racism issue on Twitter, but there's no sign of it on Facebook and Instagram? Because in my mind, you know, we all know there's a big issue with Instagram and all being very filtered and tailored to, you know, to provide this glossy image. And I know that's why people like me will never get very far sharing the brutal realities and the bad days and everything else. I'm not going to let it stop me. You know, but my argument was, you can't just, you know, like a politician releasing a bad news story on a Sunday night, you know, you can't just like put it on this one platform because there's people that demand to see it on that platform. Then on the other platforms, you just don't. Just pretend it never happened. That cost me work as well, and that, if anything, that just lit a bigger fire in my belly. And like, you've gone one step further than me. You're far braver with the whole setting up the organization, everything. I'm kind of still in that I really want to, but I'm terrified. And do you know what I mean? But so I have so much respect for you, you know, with them experiences, to then go on and do what you do. It's just amazing. And it feels like probably a really good point at this point. Is there anything you want to tell like the audience about projects you're currently working on or have done? I know you've had lots of praise and credit in the background in the past, which you're probably not going to list off and like accolades that the organization has got, but do you want to like talk about your ongoing work and if people want to get involved, how they could?
I mean, I don't know where to start. I think the most recent project that we've released that I was the most proud of is our translation resources as well. So we are going to cover, hopefully, war conditions, but it's a big task. But we're translating them into 6 different South Asian languages. And we've started with written versions of that with audio alongside it. And the three first conditions we started with were the most prevalent that came from our survey that covered anyone that had chronic illness or disability in the South Asian community. So, and it turned out that those three conditions were rheumatoid arthritis, type 2 diabetes, and chronic kidney disease. So we've covered that, and then hopefully we'll be covering other conditions, and they turned out to be like dyslexia, dementia, and I think ASD as well. That's one of our biggest ongoing projects that I've been trying to get started for a good year now. And then we're just working with engagement with other research bodies as well, like NIHR, and we did one with Diabetes UK before and stuff like that. Then we do consulting and different kinds of like workshop talks as well. Just depends on who comes to us, but we've got like South Asian organizations that come to us and we talk to them about chronic illness and disability, or we've got wider pan disability organizations that come to us and we talk about how race and culture kind of intertwines with that and why it should be discussed and acknowledged on a wider scale. There's a lot of stuff with that we've been doing. We recently just did NADEX, which was
that was amazing. I was loving watching all the social media posts, because that I was reading all those, such a massive smile on my face, thinking this is Sukshin from 2 years ago. He's now at NADEX with their own stand. It's just I've got no right to be proud, but I'm so proud of like what you're doing. That was awesome.
Oh no, that's so lovely actually. Thank you. But yeah, no, we're gonna do that again at Disability Expo in July. So if anyone's like watching and wants to talk to us a little more, like please attend. The tickets are free. I'm fairly sure they are free. So we'll be doing that and we'll be sharing more about what we're doing and just having a conversation, to be honest. We just wanted it to be like, as much as we did have something to share at NADEX, we just wanted it to be that if anyone wants to come talk to us, this is where we are, come see us. And it turned out that a few people had actually come to NADEX specifically just to see us, which was so lovely because we didn't see anyone else that was representing us in this way. And it was quite off-putting, I think, when you're in Birmingham as well. In Birmingham, of all places. And you're not seeing that diversity. We're doing that. And we've got just ongoing, like, our campaign, our Desi-abled campaign, which, if you're not aware, is the mixture of disabled with Desi, which I kind of contribute as it means South Asian diaspora. But I know there's so many other meanings behind it that really depends on the person you talk to, but that's how I reflect on it. And then we've got our Connect and Reflect sessions as well, which is one of those projects that I really wanted to do myself, and then I just kind of thought, actually, I'd just bring everyone into it, which is now an element of chair yoga and pain management techniques that we share with other South Asians, and it's just culturally sensitive space. We all get to talk about the different intersecting identities and how they work, and just meet other people that look like you as well. I feel like I've hopefully remembered most.
I think it just shows the breadth of what you're doing for such a young, it's not meant to be just, you're a young organization, and like you say, volunteer led, youth led, like the breadth of stuff that you guys are covering now is just, it's just been amazing to watch, and just like I say, seeing the change in you as well, it's just awesome to see how confident you are and how passionate you are about this, how well you look, and it's just like, I don't know, it's just, yeah, it's just people don't tell us that good stuff, so I'm just saying that just so that somebody's bouncing that back to you about how it's really noticeable and just obviously doing good for you as well as doing lots of amazing stuff for other people as well.
Yeah, thank you, I appreciate that. I think it's perseverance and resilience.
Oh yeah, I'm not detracting from the hard work, trust me, for someone who spins a few plates with different shows and podcasts, and I'm not even making that big of a difference. I'm literally just, we're just putting on this, and I know the work that goes into that, so I can't imagine the hours that go into what you're doing. I'm conscious your time, and we're all dealing with our own things, and Sunday nights probably isn't the best for everyone, but where can people find you, before I forget to ask that, if they did want to get in touch or access your services or help possibly?
It's best on social media, because that's it is best on social media. So we've got Twitter, it's at Chronic Brown, and then we've got Instagram, Facebook and LinkedIn, which is all at Chronically Brown. Reach out to there, and you'll see updates of like our projects and as they're going. It's just the best place. And there's also our newsletter as well, so if you do go on our website, you'll be able to see a little pop-up to say if you want to sign up to our newsletter. And again, probably another way to keep in touch with us. I do want to say as well, Joel, you're making a way bigger difference than you think. It's just, I feel like for our communities, when we live with chronic pain, you don't hear it as much. Just because it's almost like you take something from like conversations like this and you think, oh God, okay, I'm tired now. I've taken so much from it.
Yeah.
So you don't hear from them. But it's always going on in the background. It's definitely going on in the background, and I definitely know that you're making such a huge difference. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that, though, because every time I'm thinking it in my head, I'm like, oh, no, wait, I've forgotten, and then I don't say it, so I'm going to make sure I say that before.
I do appreciate it. I'm terrible at taking compliments, and I'm always thinking I can do better and all this sort of thing, and, there's only so many hours of that. And I think the trouble is what we do, don't we, succeed? Like, you carry a lot of burden of others as well, By the nature of what we do, we get a lot of, terrible story. I know I do anyway, a lot of bad news in our inbox, isn't it? It takes its toll sometimes, and the live streaming thing, you're always going to get the odd terrible person come in and try and ruin your night. Yeah. And all this. So I think it's really hard then to sometimes just take a minute. And I've actually started creating a list. I've got a list on the advisory of like one of these sort of mental health services I'm using. It's like, just do a win list of like things you've achieved, and that helps. But otherwise, it would just be, I'm focused so much on all the things we've got to try and fix. And I'm sure your list is just as long. And sometimes you need that counterbalance to remind you that, there are some wins in there amongst all the heartache.
I'll be honest. I've I think it's when I first started out, but even just little messages that people send me, or just like, oh, someone's retweeted us or something, like I screenshot it and I put a photo album in my album on my phone that has all this stuff. So if I'm having a bad day, I'll just have a little scroll again. I'm like, oh yes, I forgot all about that because my memory's that
Yeah.
bad. And it just cheers me up for a moment. I'm like, okay, I've got a bit more motivation. So yeah, fairly similar there. We really
Yeah.
do need to keep those things just to keep ourselves going with this kind of thing. So
Otherwise, it
yeah.
does feel like we're sort of like swimming against the tide, doesn't it? So, thank you. I do
Yeah.
appreciate it. I do appreciate it. I really do. Even if I struggle to take a compliment inside somewhere as London, so I do really appreciate it. I'm going to let you go because I'm conscious of your time. And I feel like,
Thank you.
Sukshin, that we could have done three of these. So I'd love to get you back at some point to talk about the peer leadership stuff, which we didn't have time for tonight.
Oh yes, I forgot
Yeah.
about that.
So if you'd be up for that, maybe we could pick that
Yeah.
up. It's a relatively new thing for me. You're a bit more of an old hat at it, but I feel like that's really important to if I can say
Yeah.
that, but someone's so much younger than me. But you know what I mean? I think that'd be really good. I think people would benefit from it, 'cause I've had loads of
Sure.
questions since announcing I've done that, and it's one of the things I think loads of people would do it, but it's just making people aware that it's there and the benefits of it, and that
Yeah.
you don't have to be the one with the lived experience yourself and all this sort of thing. And one of the things I'm trying to do on here more is make it more inclusive for caregivers as well as the people living with it. And yeah, so I'd like to do that. So if we can get in touch, if we
Yes.
start planning that now, then hopefully by this time next year, you and I might have a date free
Yeah, no,
that we can
it took a while to get this one sorted, to be honest.
It's actually
Yeah,
quite
no, definitely. We can definitely do that.
brilliant. Thank you. Well, Sukshin, I'm going to end by saying, like, we get people on it every single week that motivate me, inspire me, but I very rarely get somebody that is literally shining a light for, like, for what I should be doing and following. And yeah, I genuinely mean that. I don't say that on every show. Like, there's always people that inspire me on here, but I generally feel like what you do is like just an example for people like me that are sort of finding their way through it as well, of like just how to do it and make a real difference and do it in such a short space of time. So at some point, when you allow yourself, give yourself a massive pat on the back for that, because yeah, this what you've achieved in such a short space of time and how I've seen you change as a result of that is just, it's a wonderful thing to sort of like say. I feel privileged to be able to see that and see you grow. So yeah, thank you. And thank you for sharing a
Thank
little piece of
you.
it with us tonight.
Thank you. Oh, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for all the lovely things you've been saying. And yeah, just thank you. I don't even know what to say now. I think I'm gonna cry after this, in a good way, because
Okay,
it
that's
was
good.
really
That's
sweet.
good. I don't want to get a reputation for
Thank
leaving my guests a little logging off crying.
No. I can't take compliments either.
Oh, good. That's fine. That makes me feel
I'm in a
better.
similar boat. I yeah, but yeah, thank you.
Right. On that note, then, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for joining us,
All right.
Sukshin. Really
Thank
appreciate it.
you.
And
See you
yeah,
again soon.
I'm sure this won't be the last time we do things together.
Absolutely not. All right. Thank
Enjoy the rest of
you.
your weekend. Bye bye.